What's your purpose? Your why? Because at PNC Private Bank, we want to help you achieve it. We'll take care of the how, so just tell us, what's your why? To learn more, please visit pnc.com/private bank. Copyright 2022, the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. All rights reserved. PNC Bank, National Association, member FDIC.
This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, November 10th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Since Elon Musk took over Twitter, there have been plenty of questions about how the social media platform might change. And while that's being sorted out, many users are already checking out an alternative social network, one that doesn't have a single owner, Mastodon. The Twitter-like site has picked up over 640,000 users since Musk bought Twitter. But how does the Mastodon experience compare to using the Bluebird? On today's show, our senior personal tech columnist Joanna Stern will walk us through what it's like to sign up and use Mastodon, and what its adoption could tell us about how people feel about social media. That's after these headlines. A big crypto reversal. Just a day after the deal was announced, Binance says it's backing out of its plans to buy rival cryptocurrency exchange FTX after reviewing the company's finances. FTX is facing a liquidity crisis, sparked in part by a report that raised concerns about its closely affiliated trading firm Alameda Research and its own token FTT. That has led to large institutional and retail investors pulling their money from the exchange. Meanwhile, the Department of Justice is investigating FTX following the recent implosion, according to a person familiar with the matter. The agency is working closely with the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is expanding an existing probe into FTX's U.S. subsidiary. This is the latest and largest crypto firm to experience a liquidity crisis and cause massive volatility in the crypto market. Facebook parent Meta says it's laying off 11,000 employees from teams across the company. We previously reported that the social media giant had plans to begin those layoffs midweek. Meta's been struggling from a big bet on the metaverse that is yet to pay off, as well as Apple's privacy changes impacting its ad revenue and overhiring. The company said it had more than 87,000 employees at the end of September. Our reporter Sam Schechner says while other tech companies have also announced layoffs citing macroeconomic challenges, Meta's aren't like the others.
There are challenges that are specific to Meta, Facebook's owner, that are perhaps exacerbating what it's facing. And that's that in social media, it's no longer really the cool kid. A lot of people still use Instagram, but TikTok has been where the energy is. And there's even other smaller apps getting attention like Be Real. And internally, we know that Facebook has seized these as major competitive threats, on top of which growing privacy regulation changes from Apple have made its advertising less effective. These are not necessarily things that are going to change.
In election news, California's Prop 30 has failed. The ballot measure, which we talked about on the show before, would have taxed the ultra-wealthy to help fund the state's transition to electric vehicles and other green initiatives. Ride-hailing company Lyft was the proposition's biggest backer. Meanwhile, Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom and the state's most powerful teachers union joined forces with business groups and the California Republican Party to oppose the tax. Our reporter Preeti Khurana says Prop 30's failure is a big setback for Lyft.
It poured some $48 million into the campaign, and voters rejected it with overwhelming majority. And remember, this would have ultimately, sure, helped the environment, but also benefited Lyft. Now, this is because California requires that 90% of rideshare miles by 2030 be on zero-emission vehicles. So what that now does for Lyft is that Lyft will have to spend that extra money to build infrastructure, to incentivize drivers to switch to electric vehicles in order to meet the deadline. What this measure would have done is kind of fast-track that for them.
And since buying Twitter, Elon Musk has sold nearly $4 billion worth of his stock in Tesla. That's according to regulatory disclosures made public this week. Musk, who's become the world's wealthiest person, thanks in part to his stake in the electric vehicle maker, has sold more than $19 billion in Tesla shares this year. It wasn't clear what prompted Musk to sell the stock, and Tesla didn't immediately respond to requests for comment. All right, coming up, thousands of Twitter users are switching to an alternative platform, Mastodon. How does it compare? We'll find out after the break.
This year's been a roller coaster, and not the fun kind. Business, no. It's a dangerous time not to know your numbers. That's why you need NetSuite by Oracle. Over 31,000 businesses have the confidence they need. NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing offer. Head to netsuite.com/wallstreet.
Mastodon, a decentralized microblogging site, has been blowing up in popularity since Elon Musk completed his purchase of Twitter. So, what's it like to use the Twitter alternative? And what makes Mastodon so appealing? Our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, has been giving it a go, and she's here to tell us all about it. Hi, Joanna. Thanks for coming on the show.
Anytime.
So if people are switching from Twitter to Mastodon, I mean, how familiar will Mastodon seem to people who do use Twitter?
Eventually, really simple. But there's a big area from getting from signing up to figuring this out that is really complicated. I like to say it's harder to explain than to my child why he can't have Sour Patch Kids for every meal. I mean, it's like, some of it just seems impossible. But you can get through it all. And when you do get through it all, you'll have an experience that's similar to Twitter.
So it's like a microblogging platform as well, with where I'll have like a username and be able to write, you know, whatever I want to the world?
Yeah. So to understand it, you have to take a step back. And really what this is something called decentralized social media, or federated social media, as some are calling it. And so instead of one big tech giant like Meta with Facebook and Instagram, or Twitter with Elon Musk, this type of social network is distributed. And so the idea is that anyone can really run parts of this social network. And it's operated by different servers. And all of these different servers make up the bigger social network. And I know it's starting to sound confusing, but what's nice about this is that it isn't in the hands of one central person. And that means that users and the people who are running these servers can make up the rules and they make sure things are running smoothly.
Okay, so if it's not run by one big company or one, you know, individual like Elon Musk, what does that mean for people who are signing up for Mastodon? What will it mean for using the platform?
Yes. So signing up for the platform is definitely more complicated than signing up for a Twitter account or a Facebook account. You have to first sign up for a server, because as I mentioned, this is all about different servers working together and talking to each other for this bigger social media platform, which is called Mastodon. And so all these servers, they make up the Mastodon platform. So when you first sign up, you select a server and then you select a username. And similar to email, you kind of get an address together, right? So my server that I signed up for last week is mastodon.world. And my username is Joanna Stern. And so that makes my whole address joannastern@mastodon.world. And so that server is where my information, my profile, my posts, my database of followers and the people I follow, that's all housed on that Mastodon.world server.
Okay, so how do you go about picking a server? Is there a method to this?
Yeah, so, and that's really the hardest part of the signup process, is picking this server. I mean, first, for normal people, they're like, why do I need to pick a server? What is this? Like, I'm not an IT consultant, right? So first, you're like, got to understand what this thing is. Second, you want to pick a server that makes sense. And so one of the ways that the servers are sort of classified is based on different interests. You'll see some organized by artists or music and different interests, LGBTQ, journalists, etc. I want to say something, though, that is very important here. It doesn't matter what server you're on. You can talk to any person on any server. So even though I'm on mastodon.world and say, Zoe, you were on mastodon.social, I would still be able to see your posts if I followed you, and you would still be able to see my posts if you followed me.
You know, you might pick a server, you said, because you have a group or community, but, you know, who are the people behind them if they're not, say, a company? And how do you know you can trust them with your information?
Yeah, so this was the biggest question I set out to find out with this piece, because I signed up for this mastodon.world server, and I started understanding how this service works, right? Okay, some private server owned by somebody is housing this information and happens to be some of my personal information, right? It's got my profile, it's got a photo of me, it's got my posts, even got direct messages that I'm putting on the server. So I decided to get in touch with the person who runs this server, and he happens to live in the Netherlands, and he decided to start doing this as a hobby a couple of years ago. And so I got in touch with him and I asked him, okay, what happens if your server goes down? He said, well, if my server goes down, you know, yeah, you would lose everything, but I've got a backup for my server. I said, okay, well, what about the messages that I'm sending on direct messages? Can you see them? He's like, well, I could see them if I wanted to, if I went into gigabytes of data, but I don't want to, and I don't plan to do that unless there's some real extreme circumstance to do that. So the conversation really to me was about how much trust we're putting into these people that operate the servers. And truthfully, that's the case for any social media platform.
You know, the fact that Mastodon is decentralized and that's where so many people are headed, does it tell us anything, you know, sort of overall about what individuals are looking for when they go on social media?
I think right now there is definitely a group of people who have been on Twitter for a long time and now are seeing the service really disrupted by Elon Musk, for better or for worse. We don't know yet, but there are those that are feeling right now like this is not the place that I came to 10 years ago when I was first starting to use Twitter or social media. And those people might be longing for something else. I definitely know that, you know, having been on Mastodon over the last couple of days, there is a different sense of community. There's a different sense of people actually just wanting to talk with each other and find information versus Twitter right now, which is really just riled up in the new ownership and lots of talk about the principles of free speech and blue check marks.
All right, that's our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern. Joanna, thanks for explaining this for us.
Anytime.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, head over to our website, wsj.com. And if you're a fan of the show, make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
I'm Paul Jugot, and you can join me, Kim Strassel, Kyle Peterson, and our colleagues on the Potomac Watch podcast each Monday through Friday. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast app.